Okay,
ready?
Yes.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And I'm going to call the meeting to order. I'm going to start with an opening quote.
Good morning. So I wanted to do a reflection that kind of captures a couple of themes. As many of you know, it's Women's History Month. And then also at the end of the month is Trans Visibility Day. And so I wanted to grab a quotation that kind of captures both of those. When I was very heartened yesterday when I was seeing all of the International Women's Day posts and such, and I was also, when I was thinking about what I wanted to say today, noticing the absence of trans women in that presence. And so I picked a quotation from a writer who I was not familiar with. I wanted to totally get into this reflection today, so I did some reading, and I found an inspirational writer. Her name is Janet Mock, and she's a trans woman who is an activist, a writer, and a producer. And she said, "I believe in telling our stories, first to ourselves and then to one another and the world, is a revolutionary act. It is an act in which we can be met with hostility, exclusion, and violence. It can also lead to love, understanding, transcendence, and community. I hope that my being real with you will help empower you to step into who you are and encourage you to share yourself with those around you." And I hope that as we celebrate Women's History Month, that we think about our table and then we make our table extra big so we can include not just some of us women, but all of us women. And I love what Ms. Mock said about just the more we share our stories, the more we can embrace one another, and the more we kind of bless the world with our own authenticity. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's my reflection for today.
Item three is monthly summary of commission activities, which I think is Commissioner Leach, who is not here today.
Commissioner Leach won't be with us today.
No.
We can just all turn to that. Pretty level this month. I would like to just point out the letter F, deliver multilingual, multicultural, diverse, community-based hate prevention through community outreach relationship building efforts. And that will be, and as you can see, that was 11, which is fabulous. There have been some dialogue meetings that have come up the past month. Positioned towards different specific groups, and I believe this month there's coming up two that are having to do with the Latinx community. That will be the theme of it. Obviously, we're all invited to attend it, but that will be the theme. There will be a movie documentary coming up that they're going to have a showing of, and Lasuras, that's going to be shown. There'll be a watch party, and then I think the next week there'll be the opportunity to have a discussion and dialogue about it. So I think that's very important, the way these are coming through. I think it's important for all of us to try to make some of these if we can, you know, share with our networks. It's just really important way of getting out what we're trying to do.
For the next one, I'll make sure to send out the flyers.
Okay.
The one for the African American Black community, the last dialogue is tonight. So they did watch something and now they're wrapping up the conversations around the views. So for the next one, I'll make sure to send out the flyer so you can either register yourself or share with your networks.
Yeah, I think that's great. A reminder would be great because I kind of missed the one on African American. But anyway, we hope that we can all kind of participate a little bit more in that, and the main thing is sharing it out with others. And I think that was the main thing that really stood out there. There were a couple of one hate crime reported, I think. There were 10 total activities reported, 1 hate crime, and 9 and 5, 1 hate crime, 5 incidents, and 4 unknowns were reported. I'm not quite sure what the unknown is.
So, just so, with the new reporting system, we have found that folks are reporting incidents, but usually we try to follow up to get more information if it's really difficult to determine was it a hate crime or hate incident, and when we reach back out, we're unable to connect.
Oh.
So the report is there, we just aren't able to determine which way it goes. And it's because we have on we can't connect with folks again after.
Okay.
Okay. Next item is open forum. I have not received any requests, but if there's anybody who is here wishes to address the commission. Okay. Then item 4 is hearing presentation from the LGBTQ community presentations.
So I'm so excited for today because officially it's the first offsite commission meeting in Ohio. And I know that we have some fierce advocates sitting at the table that made this happen. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, we had the opportunity for the commission to listen and have an opportunity to learn from the community. So I have two organizations that one of them has been a longtime partner with us. The LGBTQ Center of OC will be presenting. And then we have a new partner that we recently started working with. And I want to make sure that we do make the change on their name. I wrote it wrong on the agenda. Their name is Alianza Trans Latinx. So they are also, So they are also here to present about what they do and the community they serve. So I'm so excited. Thank you so much for making the time to present today. And I think what I'm going to do is we can start with Riley Williams. And if you could, you can sit here and, do your presentation. So I'm going to have about 10 minutes for the presentation, and then we'll have Alianza present, then we can open up for Q&A for the commissioners.
Is it all right if I
sit? Yep, whatever you, it's comfortable, whatever you want.
You know, sitting all day.
Cool.
I think it's a little tiring sometimes, but my name is Riley Williams, he, him pronouns, from the LGBTQ Center of Orange County. I've been the programs assistant. It's going to be about 5 years coming up the end of this month. So I've kind of been involved, but really, you know, I wish Stephanie could be here, or even Peg. They have been doing such amazing work, especially in Huntington Beach, rallying people together to try to get them to get the Pride flag flying again for June. Unfortunately, it was shot down again, no matter how much we tried. If you see our Instagram page, Peg gave a very beautiful speech on there, and I think everyone should just share that and just keep bringing that awareness. Because really, as a community center, first and foremost, is we rely on the community to also help us as well, because we can't do it alone. So we ask people to join us for these rallies, for things like Trans Day of Visibility. There's going to be an open mic night that we have at the end of this month, because that visibility can be a double-edged sword, as we saw with that quote. It is bringing that awareness of these issues, such as these hate crime reports that we're getting, and even the people who don't want to submit them, who just want to say that they've gone through experiences maybe in the past that we hear quite often. But even today, hearing about a lot of youth that we know that are not able to stay at home because it doesn't feel safe, we know that there are certain schools that are being better about what they, you know, had in the past, having more presence with us there on campus, but you know, there's always more work to be done to keeping an eye on those schools, not just us, but everyone again, telling of course human OC human relations and everything about what's going on. So what we've heard is a lot of they appreciate our safe space a lot of the time, because their schools, even their GSA, sometimes can They can be that safe space, but sometimes, again, it's school. They may not be 100% out, so, you know, there's still that fear of their parents finding out, and then they come to one of our groups. We sort of have these youth groups that are social and support groups. We've tried to expand that more this year because, of course, it doesn't just stop when you're 26. You don't stop coming out. Sometimes, of course, it's later in life, and we want to be able to support people through all parts of their life, which is why we also have our senior services as well. Has been expanding. We just got a caseworker on this year because we've, again, noticed that sort of need in that sort of area where they need that sort of support with going out, with getting their medication, with finding doctors, which has also been a big thing. Finding affirming care has been very, very valuable to the community, and we really have just been trying to revamp our vetting process to make sure that these doctors are as affirming as they say they are. Sometimes people learn the language, and they just know how to say the right words, but we're there to go in and say, is this an affirming place? Can I see it on the walls? Am I talking to the right people at the counter? Are they going to misgender me? You know, I've been to Planned Parenthoods where I walk up and they're trained, supposedly, but instead I get called miss and ma'am. It's not great, and I correct them and I remind them, like, hey, I'm not going to be the only person who's going to do that, and I want you to also do better because I'm not going to be the only one here today alone who's going to need that sort of extra care to know. I handed them a sheet that said what my pronouns were and everything. So just to let you know, like, that's kind of what we're also working on this year as well, especially for our trans community, but also for everyone in the community, a lot of queer women who want to have that affirming doctor, who want to feel safe, and as well as every part of their care, not only just an affirming doctor, but endocrinologist or a specialist, a surgeon. We really want to try to make sure that we have everything for that because there's all of that need. And especially when we get into our immigration department as well, when we have people who are DACA recipients who need help doing that paperwork up again, who are needing that extra support for seeing family or just getting to a safer place when they're here. Our immigration department has been really great and wonderful and has also expanded, gone out to detention centers to just even talk with people when it is safe to do so. You know, COVID still happens, and so we still get those roadblocks, especially, again, also being the LGBTQ center, and especially for the people we want to talk to, the trans women of color that are trying to immigrate here, the just everyone in the part of the community. So really, we're here for everyone, and we mean that. And we really just ask that people be here with us, too, and keep being allies and hearing your voice throughout the whole year, not just June. And I think that's about it. You know, we've been here since 71, and we'll keep being here.
Thank you so much. I'm going to open the floor to Chloe.
Yes.
Ryan's.
Chloe, Rios, Wyatt, yes.
Wyatt. But that and
well.
I do have PowerPoint.
Thank you. So, hi, my name is Chloe Rios Wyatt. First of all, I want to thank you, Amy, for starting the meeting with such a beautiful quote from such a beautiful person like Janet Mock. Actually, it's really interesting because today, Maria Roman, my dearest sister in LA, was selected as the Los Angeles Human Relations Commissioner as well. So
nice.
She's a trans person, and hopefully one day here in Orange County we can have representation at the table, because that is what trans visibility is all about, creating spaces and ensuring that trans voices are not just being talked about, right, but also being sat on the tables where decisions are being made. So thank you so much for that. I have the privilege and the honor to lead the first and only transgender-led organization in Orange County. Along with two of my colleagues, I was able to co-found this organization. And being raised in Orange County, I really saw the need for having an organization that truly focuses on providing services that are trans-specific and that are made by trans people for trans people. I am a Latina transgender woman, very proud of who I am. And I was also at the making a public comment in Huntington Beach the other night, and it was so horrible to see that cities are choosing to go backwards instead of moving forward. But without further ado, I also want to let my colleague introduce herself, and then we're going to go ahead and get started with our presentation.
Sure. So if you want to go to the next slide, just a little bit about the programs that we offer at our center. We do offer, so what we've done a little bit today is segregated all of our little services into these three main groups right here. We have name and gender marker support services, as well as behavioral health services, as well as our food bank and social support groups. Firstly, our name and gender marker support services are incredibly important. I can say from my own personal experience that having the ability to change my legal name on the documents that represent me when I'm navigating the healthcare system, when I'm navigating pretty much any access to care that I may receive in the city, having that gender change and having that name change validates me. It makes me welcome into a space, and it helps me navigate that space with all my intention. And that's one of the things that we do. Particularly, we'll talk about our demographics in a second. We have a lot of monolingual Spanish speakers. Now, this process is almost completely done in English, and so having a peer navigator like myself in order to help you navigate and fill out all of these documents is incredibly important. Secondly, we have our behavioral health services. There was some mention about the hate crimes. These statistics are going up nationally, unfortunately, and in particular, the folks that suffer the brunt of these hate crimes tend to be LGBTQ people, and in particular, transgender and Black and Indigenous people of color. So what we do is we offer our programs in which we enroll people, we help them access certain care services that already exist in the county, but they also receive counseling services. We do have a counselor that comes into our center every Monday and Tuesday, and our individuals are able to access that free care, as well as a ton of vouchers in which we're able to offer folks bus passes, gift cards, right, to access the clothing care, what have you, that they need. It's very, very important to make sure that our communities are well, and this is one of the ways that we do so. Lastly, we have our weekly food bank, as well as our social support group. So every single Wednesday, we have a space in which we offer hot meals to members of our community to come in, and we also take advantage of that space. So what we do is we have informational as well as resource-driven workshops that focus on different needs that our community has. For example, yesterday we had an immigration lawyer come in to talk a little bit about the different types of cases and the resources that are out there in order to navigate rights to visas as well as rights to and pathways to citizenship. And then I also mentioned our weekly food bank that is open to the entire community. We offer groceries as well as fresh produce to the individuals that come in. I personally am new to Alianza Translatina because I've only been here for about a month. But just to speak a little bit to the history of what we've done, we've already served over 2,000 transgender individuals as well as those that are gender nonconforming, and we have dispersed over $50,000 in meal vouchers, emergency services, and client services. It's incredible work. I am personally very privileged to be a part of it as a trans Latina, and as also as someone who is new to Orange County. I'm going to pass it over to our founder and CEO to talk a little bit more about the demographics of the individuals that we serve.
Yeah, and I just want to highlight that aside from providing services to the trans community, Alianza Translatinx is creating job opportunities for trans people, which is one of the communities that continues to be one of the most marginalized when it comes to employment, right? So I wanted to highlight that because just like her story, our team is growing, and that also means that we not only have the capacity to provide the services, but we're employing trans people. We wanted to, aside from all the amazing services that you're gonna find on our flyer and that Isabella touched on, by the way, we've only been around for 3 years. I wanted to hone in on our Stop the Hate program, which is a program that is currently being funded by the California Department of Social Services. And through this program, we are providing prevention services for trans people who have been victims of hate crimes or violent attacks in Orange County. Through the program, we are able to provide patient navigation sessions so that our community members are linked to the services in the community that they need. We have over 180 sessions that we've been provided in the last year, patient navigation services. Through this program, we've also provided over 400 linkages to other services, such as referrals to attorneys or helping them through the process of filing police reports, which is really difficult for someone who's gone through such traumatic experiences. And through this program, we also have provided over 100 incentives, and that is so that community members who have suffered violent attacks are able to get back up on their feet and have some sort of support in the process. So as Isabella touched on, 99% of our community members accessing this specific service are monolingual Spanish speakers. The ages, 75% are between 25 to 45, and 25% of those participants are 45 to 65 years of age. And something really staggering out of the data that we've collected through this program is that 80% of our community members who are participating in that program are earning less than $10,000 a year. So really below the poverty line. So we wanted to share that with you so that you can have an idea of the community members that we are serving through Alianza Translatinx. And with that, we do have a very short video that we wanted to show you, and I don't know if it's coming up. But if it's not, there it is.
There we go, yeah.
And it is in Spanish, but there are subtitles. And it really talks about the advocacy work that Alianza Translatinx is doing. So with that, we're going to close our presentation for today. But I hope you enjoyed it. And we hope to continue to work with you in the future.
Continuamos desarrollando la participación comunitaria y capacitación de líderes trans y de género valiente en Orange County. Durante los últimos dos años, Alianza Translatinx ha sido parte del proceso de abogacía legislativa y del presupuesto de salud y equidad trans, en colaboración con la CTPA California TGI Policy Alliance.
Una de nuestras metas como la primera y única organización liderada por personas trans en Orange County es el crecer nuestra capacidad y enfoque para continuar abogando por el bienestar y el desarrollo de la comunidad Latinx y TGI a nivel local y estatal.
Mientras continuamos movilizando a la comunidad trans y TGI en Santana y el condado de Orange, el pasado 10 de mayo del 2022, Alianza Translatinx exitosamente abogó por un mandato y una resolución adoptada por parte de los supervisores del condado de Orange.
La comunidad a la cual representa Alianza Translatinx ha identificado la salud en general y la falta de asistencia de vivienda como dos prioridades en nuestra agenda de política TGI.
Con el fin de establecer equidad para nuestra comunidad en Orange County, Alianza Translatinx se compromete en continuar la abogacía, acción política y la inclusión de nuestra comunidad en la política local y estatal, así como también en el proceso legislativo durante el ciclo 2023 y en adelante. Alianza Translatinx
es abogacía,
es liderazgo
y poder comunitario en acción.
Thank you so much for the invitation to present to you all.
Thank you for being here, Riley. Thank you. And it really was, I really felt when you were saying how you go into the schools and make, try to make safe spaces for the kids and then taking it all the way to senior citizens. And I really appreciate that and love to hear what you're doing. So thank you for being here. Appreciate that. Appreciate you. And Isabella, and, pardon me, Chloe and Isabella, right? Yeah, Chloe. And thank you for sharing with us and partnering with us. We're happy to work with you, and I also, I've seen the video, I caught a couple words. My eyes aren't so great, I can read from here, but I'll get an opportunity to look at that another time. But thank you so much for all that you're doing in our community as well.
Thank you.
And were you taking questions? Or?
I'm not sure if commissioners have comments or questions for the speakers.
I just want to commend the work that you're doing.
for the community and figure out how is it that, you know, we can be helpful to your organization as you enter your third year or so. I just think that the what you're doing really saves lives and moves our community forward. So I'm interested in figuring out how we can be helpful.
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. Thank you so much for expressing that. I would say that one of the hardest things for Alianza Translatinx, as the first and only translate organization in Orange County, has been acquiring funding, and especially here in Orange County, and I don't know why. I mean, I kind of do know why, but it has been really challenging, right? So I think if we can, if you could help us make those connections here in Orange County, we are receiving funding from outside of Orange County the most, but we want the community here to get involved in our work. And if you could make that connection, I think that would be amazing, because like you say, our work does save lives, and there's a lot of community members who have been saved in the last 3 years, and some who have not. And we have had really tragic stories, and two of our community members passed away, well, they didn't pass away, but they ended their own lives in the first 2 years when we started the org. And that has been really some of the flame that helped us and ignited us to continue to do the work that we're doing with very limited resources. So yes, that would be great help.
I just want to note also, I mean, as Chloe said, having access to our services almost 24 hours every single day of the week. We are in our center from 9 to 6, and oftentimes after that, actually having folks who understand your experience, who can speak your language, I mean, that's unheard of, truthfully, in this county and truthfully in Southern California, right? There really isn't other organizations that do the work that we do who actually have our doors open. And I can speak from, I mean, limited experience, but we have folks coming in from the moment we open to the moment that we close. They just walk in, right? That experience that you can get immediately being met with a team of folks that are able to sometimes navigate you, as we said, to the services that we provide, but also just be a listening ear. Just be someone to share your experience and talk to it really doesn't exist, right? And so and we can call these things therapy services, or we can call them what have you, but actually having that human connection is very, very important. As Chloe said, you know, having funding to keep our doors open and to make sure that folks are continuing to be able to just walk in is incredibly important, both from the mental health aspect, but also from just navigating the services that do already exist in Orange County.
Thank you for that question.
Riley, and ladies, the LGBTQ community has been out front in really changing the way we use language in a lot of ways, and I've always been very impressed with that. So I'm always concerned with the idea of the phrase coming out. Yeah, I feel like that has so many other kind of implications, like you weren't in, so there's just different ways. And I just wonder, in the community, are there people looking at that language, like instead of coming out, just being, you know, or like, I am who I am, kind of language changes as, you know, the years go on. Because that phrase has always struck me as not really telling the whole story and almost making people other instead of just who they are. Just wonder if that conversation is taking place, or am I the only one who thinks that? And that's okay if that's true.
Well, yeah, we can have you start.
Yeah, so I'll stay back up there. Actually, so one thing I didn't mention is we also do trainings as well, where we cover some of that changing language. So there is that term coming out and everything. We've heard more terms of like coming into yourself, just more like that, kind of like how we are switching away from preferred pronouns to just pronouns, or some people don't like to use dead name as a term of a name they were given at birth. They instead just choose to say birth name if they feel like honoring that sort of past self. And there is that change of language. It comes also through generations, through culture. So we just like to say, like, yeah, there is coming out, and it's not wrong to say you're coming out, but there is also coming in, and you're allowed to say that too, is what we've seen.
Well, I remember just in my training as a therapist that somebody suggested we don't use the word trans anymore, we use the word alignment. Like you're aligning with your truest self as you're changing, you know, the body you were born in. And so that always stuck with me as well. And I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I guess my only thought, and that's amazing, and I think my only thought that or comment would be, I personally have never used the expression of coming out, because as a trans person, that has been my existence and my experience since day one, right? Mm-hmm. Like since I have an idea of my own sense of self, I've always known that I am a trans person. And I did not have the words to express that I am trans, but I did know that I wasn't a boy. Like I knew that from the beginning. So I never used that expression before. And I think more and more trans people are starting to also refer to their transition as a life experience, because it really is that. It's an experience that we go through, and we don't choose to be trans. We're born trans, and that's how I see it personally. But I applaud you for the work that you all are doing, and I think that's great. Coming in sounds a lot better than coming out, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
A really quick note, April 6th, we have our Spanish speakers workshop. We are currently scheduling, in the last week of March, another workshop in which we're going to be talking a little bit about those concepts, and in particular how folks can be an ally to, as well as service, the LGBTQ community, but then more particularly monolingual as well as the Latinx community. So if any of y'all would be interested in attending a free one-hour workshop, we are in the process of setting that date down, probably within this week. Please feel free to send us an email. We're going to be talking about all these concepts, working with LGBTQ youth, and in particular concerns around mental health. And that will be our English-speaking one. So if you're at all interested, please send us an email. We'll go ahead and sign you right up for more conversations of the one that was just brought up.
If you do have a flyer, you could also send that to me so I can send out to the commission.
Sure. Yeah.
And we have another question.
Thank you so much. Riley, I'm actually an elected official, and it's really difficult in our position because there are a lot of special interests and groups and stuff in the community. And I'm going to make a commitment to you to go back and listen to the public comment of Huntington Beach, even though I don't want to because I hear a lot of that already. But so I will hear from others. But since I have you here, can you just talk to me more about like why it would be important to you to have that flag in light of everybody else in the community that's important as well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not just about the flag and everything, right? It's about like that commitment and everything, because it's not going to get flown every year. We know that. It's an uphill battle, especially when you look at a place like Huntington Beach, where we know that tends to be like a more divisive area for our community. Whereas somewhere like Irvine, where I'm currently living, they have no problem with that. They invited us and everything. So it was kind of just like, okay, here is that commitment from Irvine to us as well about our community, about that conversation we're having. You know, it's having that conversation, allowing this dialogue, which of course, when we go out and we make these comments, we're allowed in expressing that, and being heard is always great, but it's the actions afterwards that also, again, are that additional push to saying we are committed to you too. So it's, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what kind of flag it could be. It was just a matter of, can we admit this is a problem here? Can we talk about this? Can we get our word in, and can we be present here too, like we are trying to be in the rest of Orange County? And so, you know, we go to City Council, we know that it's always that battle. I was in part of the Santa Ana flavor ban pass, our coalition. We led them up and we said, here are your points, let's go practice some speaking points, see what we can get. Letting them know too, like sometimes the opposition might be stronger, there might be something else going on, special interest group, we have no idea, but we have to say something. And you know, the fact that we also got a lot of other people to say something and show up, I think that's beautiful too, and that also shows that kind of commitment. And just, again, that commitment, hearing about it is what we want, is having that dialogue, having this, like, relationship, I guess.
So I almost hearing you say that during just that issue created a lot of conversation that wouldn't have been there before.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
All right, good. Thank you so much. And I just have a couple quick questions for you. I wondered if you could tell me, because I'm an employer, can you give me an example? You mentioned that sometimes your community is marginalized by employers. Can you give me an example of what that looks like, maybe a story that someone has?
Yeah, and I wouldn't say sometimes, I would say often. I personally was employed back in 2017 by a marketing company in Newport Beach, and 4 months after I was hired, they brought me into their office, and because my documentation was not reflective of my identity at the time, they said that they would have to let me go until my documents were complete, or that I had completed my name and gender marker change process. So that is just one example of how our community continues to be displaced from jobs or not being provided with the opportunities to continue to work and be employed. And just like my story, right, like there's many other stories of other trans people that maybe mine wasn't so horrific, but there's others where they've actually been thrown out of their office just because they are trans. And so that continues to exist even today, and that is why we are seeing such staggering statistics when it comes to salaries for the trans community.
And probably that's why it's so important that you have that division that does the official changes. Because I was thinking, I'll bet that the employment thing is hardest during the transition, right?
It is. It just, the whole process, it's very tedious.
Because
it's,
I was just thinking, like, afterwards, like, how would you even know? Like, as an employer, like, you don't have people's medical information.
You would think that, but they have education.
Yeah.
I have a good story for that. Because I was born in Nebraska.
Yeah.
Nebraska would not let me change my birth certificate unless I had everything done, and that's not okay.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's still evolving, probably.
It is. Yeah. And I also want to mention that I have a lot of privileges as a trans person because I've had the ability to move to other cities and possibly get some of the surgeries or hormone replacement therapy that is not available in Orange County at the moment. And other community members do not have that privilege. And we do sound different. They see us different, right? Like, so it's not just about the name change or the gender on our documents. It's about how we speak. It's about how we sound. It's about our appearance. It's about everything. And so everyone's story is a little different, but especially here in Orange County, where the resources are very limited, we don't have the opportunity to really start or complete our transition or move forward with our transition. So it can be very problematic when going to find a job or interview.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, thank you.
So I have...
And just, yeah.
I have a couple of words, so go
ahead. Okay, I'm sorry. Just the last thing is I'm glad that you're in taking hate crimes too. Are you encouraging people to get that to our data?
We already...
We're doing
did
that?
A presentation. We're partnering.
Oh, good. Yeah. Great. Thank you so much.
So my name is Adelie Duron. I use pronouns she and ella, and I'm the director of the Latinx Resource Center at UC Irvine. So I just, you know, I want to thank you for this. I'm very excited to learn. I didn't know that this nonprofit existed, and so I'm excited to learn and to share it with the campus community. I think there's a lot of space to partner. I think one with workshops was just for the campus to know that you even exist here in our local community. Because that's always been important in terms of the nonprofits, especially in Santana, and students being able to potentially even do field study or have free internships for students to be out in the community. So my commitment is to find a way to link you to our campus and potentially find opportunities for not only for potentially students to be out in the community if that's something that you're interested in, but also for you to come onto campus. We have different resource fairs, like with our public health organization, our Center. And so they do fairs like that, and there's just any opportunities to get the word out that you're here.
Yeah, thank you so much. That would be amazing. Currently, we do have interns from Pepperdine University who are supporting our behavioral health therapy. And it would be great to have some local trans-identifying behavioral health therapists who would like to intern with us or in any other areas of our organization. So, thank you so much for doing that, and we hope to hear from you soon.
And then we have Commissioner.
Hi, I'm Lauren Johnson Norris. Today's my first meeting. I'm so excited to hear from you guys, and thank you for really, pitching me. And I'll tell you, my children are named Riley and Chloe, so I feel especially here today. It's the universe provided. But what I will say is I was a commissioner in Irvine for several years, and the community development block grants are available annually for applications for funding. And one of the groups, they have different categories and classifications of intersectional groups that are funded. And we have seen applicants from LGBTQ plus supportive organizations, but not from you guys. So I'm not on that commission anymore, but I know the city of Irvine works really well with its applicants to help them get those applications through. And I just encourage you to apply. And I know all the cities in Orange County get funding through the federal government to allocate to vulnerable populations. So just encourage you to apply. There's funds out there, just looking hard for it. Thank you.
If you could make that connection, I think that would be great. Sometimes funders, they need that first connection, and if you could do that connection, we would be so grateful for it.
It'd be my pleasure, and I'll email you so I have
the
contact.
Thank you so much.
Chief Kent.
Thank you very much. Riley, Chloe, and Isabella, I just want to praise and commend your bravery, your dedication, motivation for your cause. It's funny, as you guys are standing right here in front of the signs up there on the wall says what you see.
Yeah.
And I see heroes in your industry and what you guys are doing. And my hat's off to you. And you know, as a representative of the Irvine Police Department, but also as a representative of law enforcement, you know, part of seeing that it says what you see, I see a lot of progress in where we've come as a society. But I also see there's a lot more work to be done, especially in the law enforcement community. So on behalf of the Irvine Police Department and the law enforcement community, if there's things that we can do to, you know, obviously better connect and provide that trust in you know, in your community with the law enforcement community, just know that you can always reach out to me.
Thank you.
Great job.
Thank you.
Anybody else? No. All right. Well, from the deepest part of my heart, thank you so much for making the time to share your stories, to share what your organizations do. And as Chief, I think Chief Kent said it well, it's admirable what you're doing and the spaces that you're creating for the communities that otherwise wouldn't find a space anywhere else. So thank you so much for what you do. And you have my contact info. I'm hoping we'll continue. I mean, Stephanie is part of the hate crime prevention also. But any information that you need disseminated, we can always do that as well. We have this group, but we have so many other groups that we can share information with. And I look forward to just working with you all moving forward. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Norma, for the invitation.
Thank you for
having
me.
So we do have a VIP.
Yeah. Yeah. You will move on to item 8, which is Supervisor Doug Chafee's comments.
Yeah.
Welcome,
Supervisor. You missed the hot seat right here. Well, last December, last month as chair, I wanted to get something done on racism and equity. It's been something we've been discussing for some time. Wasn't sure the new year with a different chairman what would happen. So I worked with Supervisor Andrew Doe and wanted as much bipartisan support as we could. Work out language that I thought would be acceptable to the entire board. So Andrew and I co-sponsored a resolution declaring racism and equity as a public health crisis. And that has spawned some other things. That's to start recognizing that as a problem. because experiencing racism and inequity, like our LGBT community, can lead to activation of immune and inflammatory systems, changes in brain structure, mm-hmm. elevation of blood pressure and blood sugar, and changes in how genes are sometimes spread. These biological processes are associated with increased risk for numerous mental and physical chronic health conditions like heart disease, cancer, stroke, asthma, Alzheimer's, diabetes, and even suicide. Recent data from the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic indicates that Black, African American, Hispanic, Latino Americans, American Indian, Alaskan Native population in the United States are experiencing higher rates of hospitalization and death compared to white populations. This may explain why COVID-19 mortality rates for Black people were 2.4 times greater than that of white people. Latinos are also found to have 1.5 times higher mortality rates due to endocrine and hepatology disorders compared to white populations. So, our Board of Supervisors, we can try to ensure that all people in Orange County can live healthy lives by shaping the living conditions where they live, learn, work, and play. Beyond declaring racism and inequity a public health crisis, and recognizing the connection among racism and social inequities and health disparities, we can prioritize the health of all people, especially people of color, ensuring that racial and health equity are core elements of Orange County. One thing we've done is we've adopted a program using what we call a social progress index. County was one of the counties, two counties that received a grant from the CDC, about $23 million worth, to establish a social progress index. And we're working also with a thing we called Equity in Orange County Initiative, where we meet quarterly with different members of the community to try to bring about these ideas, because this is a tool that we want to see used in other places. The Social Progress Index is founded around three basic things. One, it deals with basic human needs, like nutrition, shelter, and basic medical care, and foundations of well-being, like health and wellness, and environmental quality that you live in, and also opportunity, such as access to education and physical freedom and choice. The Social Progress Index drills down to census tracts, large number of the county. And this changes over time, so we need to constantly survey it. This contrasts with the usual survey that you see, which is based on income. These are living things that people have to live through and live in, and not necessarily just the income that you have. So we try to spread this through. I'll give you one example where we are using this now as a tool. That's our PalOffa Health. And that's kind of the target that we need, because some 950,000 people in the county get their health care through PalOffa Health, and that's growing. And so we're looking at a vision in PalOffa Health, which I'll share with you. It has three components. One is the same day that you need an appointment, you're going to get it, if you remember. Not that you have the service then, but you can get an appointment. And usually in the past, you've had to wait a week or more to get that appointment. Providers who are not paid as much as some in other private situations will get paid the day they render the service. And then the final thing in our vision, which is a holistic whole person vision, we have a health assessment for the whole person for all of our members. Using the Social Progress Index is more than just a medical examination. It's more than just a blood test, a metal test. It's where you live, what's affecting you, and how can we make the whole person better. A special emphasis on the equities and inequities that we find through the Social Progress Index. This is a five-year vision of PalOffa Health. It takes some time. We're investing heavily in the computerization that we need to join these things together. There is something that we're now doing, I think I have to share this with you, and it deals with the whole person. We have a new CalAIM health issue with the state. And interestingly, that allows agencies like CalOPTA to engage in housing. And so last week, we were talking about buying a motel so we can use our resources to begin with people that need the whole person care to qualify under the CalAIM program. We'll see how that goes. It's not particularly public yet because we don't want the NIMBY faction to come in and give us an issue, so we're looking to buy that kind of thing. And interestingly, it will be near a new shelter that another city wants to do. So we try to study these things. At the point in time count, for example, showed us where there were gatherings and clusters of homeless people and where the services were. So it's more than just a count, it's a useful tool. So while we are committed at the county to addressing the needs of our communities, we're not going to get there if we don't all work together. That's very key. So I know the work you guys do, it's very important and that you stay on it and examine all the different needs that you can. Because you're not looking at income necessarily. You're looking at what we do think is important in our social scheme of things. You are basically kind of on your own, a social progress index. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. So I'm open to any questions you have. If I can answer anything, but yes.
Not a question, but a comment. So I'm so pleased to hear about what's going on with CalOptima. I think with resolutions, I used to be a county employee, and I've come before the board with resolutions before, and they're nice, but they're not necessarily actionable. And so I love how what's going on with CalOptima connects with the resolution around social determinants of health and declaring racism as a public health issue. I think that kind of action and the leadership with the board is really exemplary, and I applaud that. So I don't have a question, but just not that you need my praise, but it's really nice when you can see what's going to happen after the resolution. And when I read the other day about what's happening with CalOptima, I was delighted to see that. So thank you for your leadership and taking that next step. That means a lot for our community.
Well, the Board of Supervisors is really kind of the tip of the iceberg. We're on so many other boards that are more fun, actually, than the other ones. Yes?
I just want to echo what Amy just said, Supervisor. First of all, we don't get a lot of supervisors coming, so thank you for being here. Number two, thank you for your constant support of this commission. And we really do work very hard at trying to make our county just the best county can be. $23 million is a game changer. That was the
grant. CDC grant.
CDC grant. And that's incredible. And for elected officials to get behind these kind of things is really important because the people you are helping aren't necessarily the people who are voting. And so you take a risk when you do that when you don't have to. And so I really want to acknowledge that. I mean, this volunteer commission can do that easily because we just serve at the pleasure of the supervisors or the city selection committee. But when elected officials take positions that may not be in their best elected interest, that's what I define as leadership. And lastly, I just want to say the connection you drew between racism, hate, and health that is not correlation, that's causation in my mind. And so I thank you for putting a big spotlight on it and really, really appreciate your leadership on all areas, but particularly this area. So thank you. Thank you.
Anybody else?
That would be off easy.
Well, I think on behalf of our chairwoman, thank you so much for making the space and time in your tight schedule to come visit and speak to the commission. I know that the resolution was very significant for all of us, And having the two presentations in here today just kind of was the icing on the cake. So we're so happy that you were able to speak to us and make time. And additionally, thank you so much for your support in our expansion of our anti-hate work. I know that we met this early this week, and I know that we're continuing to push that forward. But I know that you and other members of the board were pushing and were key players in continuing and expanding our work there. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, we're trying to push forward. That's our equity and OC initiative where we're meeting with the community. And there are, like, I think, 150 different organizations from the community that typically meet with us. They're very excited about the inequities that we're trying to resolve and push forward. But you have to bring it into the community to make that happen. And there are a number of things that you'll see this year. For example, we're making a major effort at criminal justice reform, which you'll see.
So one final question. The motel that you talked about, is that in your district or in another part of the...
I'm sorry?
The motel that you talked about, was it a motel that you talked about?
Yes.
Is that in your district or is that in another district?
I believe it's on the border, but I'm finding, I meet quarterly with each of my seven city managers and go to their cities and I hear what they're doing. It's an opportunity to push some things, and some city councils are better than others.
He's looking at me.
Your council is very much together. It makes a difference.
Thank you for letting the committee know that. They don't really know me.
They want to be very together, but not really. So we want to put them together and help them to work together. What is happening in different cities, Anaheim and White Park are making big pushes to clean up Eastville Park. And Anaheim recently bought two motels as a third one kind of in between they're going to get. It's not easy because, oh, you're the city, you want to buy my motel? Gee, what's my price? Mm-hmm. It doesn't often pencil. So they're trying to get a third one, but what Anaheim is doing, and it's been talked about for a long time, is trying to clean up Beach Boulevard. And what they're doing is they're enforcing their anti-camping laws. So you have homeless people that don't want to go into shelter, and shelters are our rules and the issues sometimes. We try to serve people on the street too when we can. But it's pushing homeless people down toward Stanton and Garden Grove and most of those places. And that's where that motel will be located, in that cluster down there. And the city that is looking at a new shelter along with, I think, Mount Valley is Garden Grove, and compliment that council for its willingness to move forward. You have to be kind of careful before you reveal locations. There seems to be NIMBYs everywhere, and that council is very supportive. They do a great job, actually. So we're doing other things. Like I mentioned, another thing that Cal Optima and our healthcare department are doing together is street medicine for homeless people. Go out to the street and try to help them, and it just we don't want so many of them dying. You know, it's tragic. And I must compliment another city. I must compliment Fullerton. We had a issue with getting shelters for the cold weather. The county began back in June with an RFP to get a shelter open for the cold weather. We didn't get any response. A single provider stepped up. Eventually we worked down to where the Salvation Army stepped up. And they do a great job, and especially in Anaheim. They had a facility in Santa Ana that we were going to use for a cold weather shelter. And lo and behold, City of Santa Ana stepped up and said, no, you won't. We'll sue you if you do. And so thank goodness Judge Carter retained the jurisdiction of everything. He said, yes, you will. But by then, the Salvation Army felt it had been, didn't want to step into it. So Fullerton stepped up. We have a cold weather shelter there with an emergency shelter together in Independence Park. And I have nothing but compliments for that city for stepping up when others would not. It's been cold. And that shelter has been over capacity since it's been open. So we have to do some of these things. And thank you, Placentia, for taking the shelter and Buena Park did as well. That's part of our North Spa, as we call it. And again, compliments to Fullerton and others in the North, where we are opening the Hope Center, which is a dispatch point for social workers who can now serve, eventually, maybe 11, maybe 13 different cities on a 24/7 basis to respond to homelessness. My goal there is to go beyond that. I've been an advocate of putting social services and policing for quite a few years. And people who are not homeless have issues too. So we need to serve the whole population if we can. And if I can get a day where I see an ad that says, police department now hiring social workers, that's a goal. Will I get there? Well, it's actually happening now. 5 years ago, it wasn't a topic I could even address. Because now we need to go through the political world to make that happen. And that, I think, has a chance. You guys know why.
Well, thank you so much. Expressing the, you know, pushing this resolution forward and expressing the importance of the crisis. Thank you so much.
Okay. Item number 5 is Commission Staff Reports, update on Board of Supervisor office visits.
Okay, I need to breathe.
Yeah, we need to take a moment.
Can I tell you?
I'm trying to breathe over here.
I need to process what just happened. Okay, I'm dealing with all of the emotions. Honestly, that was great.
That's an example of us coming as a community and making that accessible.
Yeah.
Well, I think that that's what I want to say. I commend the commission for really pushing. And I know this has been something that we brought up consistently for a long time. Commission used to do this a lot more often, and then we didn't. But I think today is proof of how important it is for us to go to where folks are at. Where there's free parking. maybe not a lot of parking, but you know, that we're there where people can access us. So, okay. Ooh. Tied to this in my reports in December, there was a directive from Supervisor Doe that we report back on the investment of $1 million for the expansion of the anti-hate work. So Ted, James, and I worked closely on a PowerPoint presentation to share the information and input. And I had 3 meetings this week with 3 board offices. There's 2 others that I'm still waiting to get scheduled. And that hopefully brings back good news for our contract. So I wanted to just share that some of you were at that event yesterday, and Supervisor Foley might have spoken about it, and it was because of that meeting. And I'm hoping that now with the transition and with some of the changes that we've been able to implement, I'll be able to have more access and will be able to provide more information directly to the board offices, so they really do know what the commission's up to and the work, great work that we're doing. So that's my update.
Thanks, Sam.
Okay, item number 6 is update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff.
No updates on my part.
Okay, and then the item 7 is OCSD Interfaith Council.
So we had an executive board meeting yesterday with the sheriff, and we have our year planned with 4 events. And so I'd like to ask Norma, once the calendar is complete, if we could send it to the commissioners. I think these are events you'd really, really enjoy. Not at the level of yesterday's event, but similar kind of subjects that we're wrestling with and discussing. And they also just will be publishing the next day or two its first newsletter. I was going to bring it, but they're focusing on a member of the advisory board, and so I happen to be the focus of it, so I thought it inappropriate to bring my own thing, but Norma, if we could send that out, I think, because there's a really beautiful explanation about what the Sheriff's Interfaith Council does, and just a reminder for all of the new commissioners, this began at the time of Ferguson, when everything was going on with the police and African-American issues and minority issues. And at that time, a pastor from AME Church, Mark Whitlock, and Sheriff Hutchins got together, and they said, you know, why are we going to wait for a tragedy to happen here before we respond? Let us be proactive. And if I recall, it was 2016, there was a beautiful march of thousands of people in the city of Irvine, and from that point forward, this committee, so now we're talking 7-8 years, and Sheriff Barnes is now really, I think, taking it to the next level. He feels very passionate about this. He shows up at the executive meetings and the main meetings. I mean, he is very present for this. We have, you know, probably 100 different faith communities involved, anywhere from 20 to like 40 show up at an event. But I really think it's an OCHR commission driven thing. Lionel is our new staff member, if I'm not mistaken, out of our commission. And even though the sheriff runs it, it really came from here with Rusty Kennedy, the sheriff, and Pastor Whitlock. So that history is important for us to know. And it's always an invitation for these educational meetings, from fentanyl to LGBTQ issues to how law enforcement is trained. One of the programs we're going to do is go to the academy, be in the simulators, and really think about how police officers and sheriff deputies do their job. And that really affects how we understand the people who are presenting to us all the time as well. So just a pitch for this, and to show up, open invitation to one or all of the events. I think you really will find them very worthwhile. Even if you're not part of the faith community as a commissioner, you have a right to be there because it's co-sponsored by us.
Looking forward to the flyers coming out.
Good. Yeah, we'll get it to you.
Okay. Last is announcements from commissioners.
Well, I'd like to start by welcoming our newest commissioner, Lauren. I forget your last name.
Johnson.
I knew that. Lauren, you know her kids, Johnson name. Norris. I know your kids. Yeah, Riley. And I'm going to just have you introduce yourself to the rest of the commissioners.
Well, thank you so much. I am so happy to be here. My name is Lauren Johnson Norris. I was appointed by Supervisor Foley. It's been a powerful morning. Supervisor Foley. I live in Irvine, and my work for the last 19 years has been as an attorney representing juveniles as well as kids and families in the child welfare and criminal justice system. And I served in Irvine for 6 years as a commissioner, so 4 years at Community Services and the Irvine Children, Youth, and Families Advisory Committee, and 2 years as a finance commissioner, as well as on their investment advisory committee board. Like I said, I'm a mom. I have twin 10-year-old girls. We're also of Jewish faith, and I personally have experienced harassment and discrimination, like many members of our diverse Orange County community, for my ethnicity. And so I'm just so pleased to be here. I'm excited for the work to really learn what you're doing, how I can contribute, and how we can move Orange County forward to be a safer, more inclusive place for really an intersectional, diverse community with lots of people of all walks of life. So thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Oh, thanks so much, Lauren. We're happy to have you.
Thank you.
And speaking, we've had little snippets of yesterday. the event yesterday was pretty amazing, and if you could kind of chime in on this. When we had, the council was part of putting this together, Cal State Fullerton,
Museum of Tolerance.
The future, pardon me?
Museum of Tolerance.
Museum of Tolerance. We've involved Museum of Tolerance. It was a pretty amazing event with a former, you know, white supremacist leader, Jeff Shep, that came to speak with us. And I was talking to Norma a little bit earlier and just thanking her, but also saying we could see that being an all-day conference because we just kind of wanted, I think everyone in the room wanted more, and it was kind of cut short due to the time restraints. But he was very articulate, and he was very authentic with his presentation. And it's just so important to see someone like that that had gone so far to the dark side and realized that hate is not the way. And he's educating others in the community. He's pulling people out of these organizations. And it was very impressive. And just thanks again to all the work that the council did on it. It was really well done.
Can I just add a couple of things?
Sure.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for making that happen.
Yes.
I just want to say that I was very moved yesterday, and I think I shared with you that when I was listening to him, Jeff, right? His name is Jeff. When I was listening to him, I just, when I saw the video, I just had such a horrible feeling throughout my whole body that I was like, I don't know if I can sit through this. Mm-hmm. But I needed to see that in order to appreciate him and see how far he had come. And I just want to say it was really gutsy, but I feel like it was so impactful for our community. And to see, I mean, the place was full. It was standing room only at some point, right? And Norma, you know, pinned me and said, we need Latinos. And I was just so thankful to take them to such a quality event. We did translation on the side there. But we took, I don't know, about 10 folks. And, you know, it's just like, I don't think they had ever been exposed to that. And frankly, neither have I.
Yeah.
And so it was just so amazing. And the food was,
the food was
awesome, I gotta
say.
So anyway, thank you. It was beautiful. I'm just very proud to be part, you know, of that great group that was making that so special.
It's pretty, thank you so much, Ada. To have the former leader of the Nazi movement in America in a synagogue is just striking and scary, and I'm glad our police force was there. But the way it was framed, and the professor from Cal State Fullerton, I thought was just special beyond, and framed it in such a way that it was inviting as we were having these really internal battles within ourselves to listen to this, but the juxtaposition of all of it, I think, was really an important message about moving forward, healing, and whatnot. And I totally agree, Joanne. We should make it an all-day program. I mean, that may be something that the Michigan can sponsor and write a grant for, or something like that. I was going to say
thank you so much for those who made the time to be there, Rabbi. Every single time I make a call, ask for a favor, he's always like, sure, let's make this happen. Definitely gutsy move on all fronts. Mind you that I wasn't there because I had something else going on that yesterday, but I was very much part of the planning committee. And organizing this event was nerve-wracking, and a lot of conversations with a lot of different people who were like, I don't know if you want to do this. I don't know if you should do this. In the end, the council and I were like, well, we truly believe in restorative justice and restorative practices. And if that's what we center our work around, we have to do this. We need to allow this man to tell his story and somehow the redemption part of it. And we need our communities to hear it. They need to know that there's hope and that we all make mistakes. We're all human and we can come out of the other, you know, on the other side. Especially if we reach out, you know, with a hand of, let me help you, let me make you understand. I'm so happy that we had standing room. Honestly, I think for the lead organizers that were really nervous, it wasn't an open public event. we were very diligent on who we invited in this space, but also making sure that there was a diversity aspect. With Jingzhou, it's funny because I met her early on in my career here. I trained her to do circle keeping, and she's been doing that since she got trained with her husband, and she called back and said, I want to do this with you all. But we've had discussions about this being like a first thing of many more things we could do on a deeper level. So,
and just as an aside, the federal government, the guy from Homeland Security said, yeah, just let me know, we'll pay for it. So,
and that, it was through that. So it's those partnerships, right? The importance of the partnerships that we build through this work. We have someone from the Department of Justice now on our hate prevention network that we lead. We have someone from Homeland Security in our hate prevention network. We need law enforcement, so we might work with Chief Kent to help us in that regard. But I really do believe that if anything is to come from this event, our presence is definitely part, should be part of that. So I'll keep it all in the loop.
If I could just share something from a law enforcement perspective, thank you for hosting that event, Rabbi. It was very powerful. I can tell you from a law enforcement standpoint, been doing this job for 20 plus years. Some of my partners that were there have been doing it for 25 plus years. We've sat across tables. When you hear stories of recovering drug addicts or recovering alcoholics or victims of prostitutions or pimps that, share their story, this was the first time where we have gotten the opportunity to hear from someone in that capacity. And it was powerful. I mean, you could see he got a standing ovation at the end, at the conclusion of the presentation. But it was fascinating hearing his story and then him sharing is how he grew up, the household, because we all assume the worst. Like, abusive family, drugs, this, that, whatever it may be. It was far from that. The other part of it that really stood out to me is, I heard it wrong, but then he said it twice, mentioning how his grandfather fought in Hitler's army. So he came from that. So you always wonder, he didn't really get into that too much. Mm-hmm. Like, how much influence did that have in his path? But he did mention that his grandfather actually tried to talk him out of what he was doing. But I can tell you that, is it risky? Yes, but it was definitely the right risk. I think we were very deliberate of who was invited and the right people in that room, and these are all people that influence change within their own communities, mm-hmm. and I think it was absolutely the right way to go about it. So my hat's off to you, Norma, and I'll see you after. Yeah. Yeah. So you did a great job.
I also want to add, actually, so you guys had that wonderful event, which I could not attend. Please excuse me. But I had a working luncheon that I hosted, and everybody wouldn't stop talking about it. The minute they walked in, where were you? You missed a great... I'm all like, I will hear all about it, because you guys... They all attended for some reason, and half of them were trying to guilt trip me. So I have to add just how fantastic it was, even though I wasn't there, but it's from echoing from everybody else who came for lunch. Every single one of them attended.
We all try to get me.
Hopefully there will be another opportunity. Yeah. All right.
Any more
announcements from anyone? Well, I think we officially adjourned.
Congratulations.